This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
And you are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass. Macca.
Yes. Now, Tony Walker is the Adjunct Professor, School of Communications at La Trobe University. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just fine, thank you.
Fantastic.
And I'm hoping the rain will help.
Yes.
When I head to the golf course.
Lovely.
Well, let's hope that you're also out inside and away from the rain. So in case it rains, we're not going to hear rain on your rooftop.
Yes.
No, but I do have a tin roof, I have to say.
Oh, there you go. Now, Tony, I'm interested, you know, Hong Kong's relationship with China. We've seen extraordinary numbers of people demonstrating, and actually in the earlier in the introduction, the aunt of a friend of mine, she's in her 50s, North Shore, Sydney. She's at Sydney Airport on her way to Hong Kong, mainly to take part in protests. Now, I find this extraordinary, that someone of that age and, you know, from Sydney, very happy living in Australia, you know, is going to Hong Kong to protest. We've seen a huge diversity of people taking part. It's not just students in Hong Kong. Tell us your thoughts on this. I mean, this is an area of particular interest.
Yeah. Look, I find it really humbling, I have to say. We've had now four waves of protests, the latest yesterday and overnight. Something like 2 million Hong Kongers have been on the streets out of a population of around, at any one time, well, in the biggest protest, out of a population of about 7.5 million, which is just extraordinary.
That's massive, Tony.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. If you take Sydney as an example, that would be more than 1 million Sydneysiders on the street. I'm not sure what would get them 1 million Sydneysiders out on the streets, but anyway, that's another matter. What it does reflect in Hong Kong, of course, is concern about creeping interference and control from Beijing as 2047 approaches, which, of course, is the end of the 50-year one-country-two-systems arrangement that Britain made with Hong Kong back in the mid-80s for the handover in 1997. So this agitation, which is has been over an extradition bill or the legislation that would make it easier for China to extradite alleged criminals to China, is really part of a broader story.
Tony, I need to intervene.
We know that... sorry, Tass. I sort of wonder why China do this, because someone that they in Hong Kong that they want, they just kidnap them usually.
No, the word is disappear.
Oh, disappear, that's right. Yeah, you disappear.
But Tony, go backwards a little bit and just explain to our listeners what the extradition order actually means. For most people, it is not a concept that we readily use in our community. What does it actually mean? What's the impact of this?
Well, Australia has extradition agreements with various countries, and I think we do have one with China as well, if I'm not mistaken. And they function under the rule of law in our system, and where people's legal rights are protected. I think the concern in Hong Kong is under the one country, two systems formula that Hong Kong itself, under the joint statement of principles and then followed up with the basic law, which really established Hong Kong post the British handover, Hong Kong was meant to be guaranteed its judicial independence. And Hong Kongers see this, what the Chinese are proposing, what the Legislative Council is proposing, as an infringement on that judicial independence.
And they're
legitimately concerned about it. Just to make the other point, from China's point of view, I think it has its eyes on corrupt officials who've taken refuge in Hong Kong and they'd like to retrieve them. I mean, that's the pretext for making it easier to extradite people from Hong Kong.
Well, there's no shortage of corrupt officials in China. I don't know why they need to go to Hong Kong to find them. But the interesting thing is that, of course, what informs this in a way, Tony, is China, the government of China, and let's be honest, it's a dictatorship. It's not a democracy. That they actually don't have any experience with democracy. So they don't actually, for them to understand and get their heads around, you know, between 25 and 30% of the population of Hong Kong coming out on the streets, because not just so they don't agree, but they don't want this law change to happen. Now, of course, last time something like that happened in China, and it wasn't anywhere near that percent, was Tiananmen Square, and we know the outcome of that. So I think one of the problems China has is they're not quite sure how to deal with this. The world spotlight is on Hong Kong. It is a free media in Hong Kong, pretty much. They can't control as much as they as if you're in mainland. And, of course, the CEO or the chief, is it the chief executive of Hong Kong? Is that the
chief? Yes, the chief executive, yeah.
And I call her Carrie Lamb to the slaughter. Because that's what she's going to, that's what's going to happen.
Well, we hope not literally.
Well, no, not literally, but...
he means her career will be over.
That's right, yeah. She's on borrowed time. But how do you think China is going to deal with this? Because what are they going to do?
I think it's interesting. I should tell you that I was correspondent in China on two separate occasions. In the late 70s, early 80s for the for Fairfax newspapers and the Financial Times, and then again in the 1990s, and I covered the July 1st handover in 1997 of Hong Kong. So I've lived with this for quite a long time. What the Chinese, of course, are concerned about, and they have yielded ground. I don't think Carrie Lam would have given ground or suspended her proposal to pass this this measure if Beijing had dug its heels in. But what it's concerned about, of course, is these sorts of protests contaminating the situation in China itself, which is why they've shut down websites and curtailed images coming out of Hong Kong that would be available on the mainland. I mean, a number of news organizations have had their sites blocked, I think, including The Guardian and others. The Age, I know. So they're trying to quarantine Hong Kong from what people in China are able to observe for obvious reasons.
Are they succeeding, in your view? In quarantining this information from getting out?
Well, you know, when I went to China in 79, information flow was negligible to local people. Of course, things have changed dramatically since then. It's a hell of a long time ago when I think about it. So people on the mainland are much more aware, of course, about what's happening in the outside world. The Chinese authorities can't turn the spigot off completely. But I think the other thing that might be said, and this was certainly during the Tiananmen episode, is that Chinese leadership of that generation could see themselves, frankly, in the young demonstrators on the square. Because after all, they themselves participated in an uprising against the established order back in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
So, Tony, where's this going to land? Where's it going to go? What's your analysis?
Well, clearly, the authorities in Hong Kong are not going to provoke the mob. I don't say the mob pejoratively, by the way, anytime soon. Now, whether they will completely shelve this measure completely is not clear. Of course, we've got face issues involved here in Hong Kong and, of course, on the mainland, so they won't want to be seen to be capitulating completely. But I'd like to think this is a bit of a watershed moment and that China might have heeded a lesson from this. I mean, the last thing it wants to do is have total chaos in Hong Kong. That would not be in China's interest, obviously, I mean, let alone Hong Kong. So I wonder if there won't be a sort of pullback or a stand down for the time being. But I don't see China sort of loosening its grip in any significant way.
So in a sense, sorry, Mac, it feels to me like there's a bit of a tension here, because if they do let go of this, it'll be business as usual again. But on the other hand, you're saying that they're not going to loosen up their grip. So it's a bit of a conflict, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, there is, one of the favourite words of the Chinese or the communist dialectic is contradiction. I have plenty of contradiction in my life, I have to say, and in Canberra too, I should tell you. But that is a contradiction. But what we should understand about the Chinese as well is that they are pragmatists, and sometimes, you know, I think our so-called national security establishment in Canberra has trouble entirely coming to grips with that concept. So whether the Chinese authorities let sleeping dogs lie for the time being, I'm not sure, but I would think that's what they will do. But what's extraordinary to me, I suppose, back in 97, I covered this from a hotel room overlooking Tiananmen Square, wow, where there were tremendous fireworks celebrations, you can imagine, on July the 1st, 1997, at retrieving Hong Kong and Kowloon from the British. And back then, I thought, 50 years on, I won't be around.
Well, you might be.
Well, possibly. But we're already 22 years into that 50-year period, and it's passing more quickly, I think, than people had kind of understood or anticipated back then. You know, what we're talking about is 2047, when Hong Kong will become, you know, part of one system.
Yeah. So I think, of course, President Xi, there's, I think, a G8 or something meeting happening in the next week or so, or an ASEAN meeting. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want this to still be going on when he goes there.
I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, it's the G20 meeting in Osaka,
yeah,
later this month in Japan. And frankly, Xi has much bigger fish to fry there.
Yeah.
There's the outstanding disagreement with the US over trade. I mean, that would be the main priority for Xi and Trump if they do meet on the margins of the G20. And you're absolutely right. I think the last thing Xi would want while he was in Osaka, if indeed is things out of control in Hong Kong. I think that would be absolutely the last thing he wants. So that's probably fed into the sort of posture that Beijing has been adopting.
I suspect they're going to, and I'll give you a new saying here, they're going to use the Peking duck approach, the slice and dice, rather than the salami tactic, which we refer to.
Well, you know, that reminds me, you know, all those years I was correspondent in China, about 10 years, actually, and there are a number of duck restaurants. The sick duck, which was near the hospital, and then there was, I can't remember, there were three or four that we used to frequent.
Well,
I'm very partial, I'll tell you what, I'm very partial to Peking duck, but cooked in Beijing, because, you know, they use fruit tree, wood from fruit trees to cook the duck, and it gives it a particular flavour.
Oh, beautiful.
Flavor,
oh, I didn't know that.
They gas them here.
Well, the reason I say the Peking duck approach, the slice and dice, is they're just going to slice and dice a little bit of freedom each time.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
And we know that the main train station that now between Hong Kong and the mainland is actually Chinese territory.
Yeah.
Once you enter that train station, you're actually under the Chinese control. So I think the Peking duck approach is absolutely what they're going to do.
But could I make one other point? You know, I reported the first free markets in China, which were in Chengdu, the capital of Sichuan province. These were the first farmers' markets, if you like, in China, where farmers were able to sell their produce on the street. And previously they'd had to provide their produce to the collective, so they were able to sell their own product for their own benefit. That was the beginning of the whole reform process. So where they were there then and where they are now is just almost beyond my comprehension. And when I was watching this and reporting on it, among the first reporters to go down there was Fox Butterfield, actually, from the New York Times. I knew it was significant, but if someone had said to me then, that China would be where it is now, I wouldn't have believed them, quite frankly.
Well, the Chinese government is about as communist as Donald Trump, so. Well, look, it's
perhaps less.
Yeah.
Tony, thank you for your time this morning. It's been very interesting conversation.
We really appreciate it, and we'll have you back to talk more about
absolutely
eating and greeting.
Well,
I'm happy to
talk about other things
in China.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's a pleasure.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.